France versus the Industrial Claims Appeal Office. Let me make a short, these are being argued together, is that correct? Two cases and one argument? Is that satisfactory to both parties?
Fine, Your Honor.
Okay. The argument is set for 15 minutes per side. There's a clock to determine how much time you've used. It's operated by the bailiff. There's a module on the lectern that will be show a green light during the first 10 minutes, a yellow light during the next 5 minutes, and a red light at the end. There's also a reverse down clock, countdown clock there that will keep you constantly posted about the time you have remaining. For the appellants, if you want to reserve time for rebuttal, you may do so in reliance upon the module, or you can ask me and I'll try to give you some indication that you've reached that time, and then you can choose how you wish to use it. We would advise you that we have read the briefs and the cases cited in the briefs, and one of us has been into the record. We perceive we understand the facts and the law as stated in the briefs, but so we would recommend you go directly to the legal arguments and not dwell at any length of time on the facts. But the time is yours. You may use it as you please. There is a microphone on the lectern, the purpose of which is to record the arguments and also amplify them. We digitally record them, place them on the internet. We use them in the process of preparing an opinion on occasion, so we ask you stay at the lectern during argument so the microphone can clearly pick up what you have to say. There are two toggle switches on the lectern that raise or lower it to your comfort, so please feel free to adjust it. If anyone has cell phones, Blackberries, or other electronic devices that go off unexpectedly, please turn them off so as not to disturb either counsel or counsel in the course of the conversation in to which we are about to engage. Do you wish to reserve any rebuttal time?
Yes, Your Honor.
5 minutes. I will let you know when that time arrives. If nobody has any questions, we're ready to proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Patty Ragland. I represent the claimant in this case, or the appellant, Vincent Franz. Mr. Franz actually appealed both of the claims that are before you, and if I may, I would like to address my initial comments to the appeal that was taken first in time, and that is the one that deals with the medical utilization review. The MUR, as we refer to it as practitioners, is a review that is completed by a three-physician panel. The three physicians are selected by the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation, and they serve to evaluate whether a change of physician is appropriate in certain circumstances or to retroactively deny the payment of medical bills that have already been authorized for that provider.
But the latter was not an issue here.
That was not completed in this process. There was not a unanimous decision by the MUR to do that.
Retroactive denial of fees. It was strictly selection of a new physician.
Correct.
Okay.
What was decided by the two of the three voters, or unanimous decision that was made by the MUR, was that a change of physician was appropriate. It's important to realize in this particular circumstance that a conflict of interest can exist for these practitioners serving on the MUR panel, just as they can in any other circumstance, in a division IME, in a judge's evaluation of a case, in an attorney's representation of a client. The director has set rules to evaluate what a conflict is for an MUR panel member. The director has
Let me ask a question here.
Yes.
You'll write to the director's rules. It's true, there is no statute with respect to conflicts of interest for those on the MUR panel, correct?
That is correct.
We're solely dealing with department rules.
That's correct.
Okay.
And we are specifically dealing with Rule 10.
Mm-hmm.
Rule 10 provides that
Is it your position that basically we are bound by Rule 10 itself to have found a conflict in this case?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that you are.
What other authority is there other than Rule 10 that would suggest that we could do something about a conflict in this case?
I think there is a fundamental fairness in the judicial process that must be evaluated by this court.
Is this a judicial process? Is the MUR situation a judicial process? And do you have any authority for the proposition that those types of appearance of impropriety tests must be also applied to the MUR? I bet you can't understand that question.
Is an MUR a quasi-judicial proceeding?
In my opinion, it is, Your Honor. Whether the court evaluates it as such, I'm not certain. But I don't think that that is what is pivotal in the determination here.
One part of my lifetime, I represented a hospital. There were utilization reviews done by the federal government for Medicare and Medicaid, utilization reviews done by insurance companies. These were all designed to determine utilization and appropriate utilization of services. Those are not typically quasi-judicial proceedings. You have a doctor or a nurse form an opinion and advise the payor about that matter. How is this different than that?
Because in this circumstance, the panel members are not advising the payor. And that's a critical difference. What is granted the Medical Utilization Review Committee members is great weight in the director's decision to change a physician or to modify other factors. Great weight is granted to the Medical Utilization Review Panel members' decision by the administrative law judge in rendering
the decision.
Are you
suggesting, therefore, that it is a review in which advocacy should be permitted, a hearing held, and witnesses called?
If there is not going to be a pristine manner in which these individuals are reviewed for conflicts, then there must be an adjudicative process that allows the claimant to be heard in the process as well. Otherwise,
doesn't the claimant have an opportunity to do that in a subsequent hearing before the ALJ challenging the MUR?
No, Your Honor, they do not. They are not granted the opportunity to be able to cross-examine these panel members.
I didn't say that. I said challenge the recommendation of the MUR.
There is no hearing. There is a record review conducted by the administrative law judge. Great weight is afforded the panel member's decision, and it is at that point that the administrative law judge either passes or refuses on what's already been decided by the panel members. The claimant doesn't get the opportunity to come in and argue.
The claimant does have the opportunity to submit whatever the claimant wishes to submit on the decision of whether to change the position, isn't that correct? Documents. Isn't the record here indicative that documents were submitted to the MUR urging them not to change the position? Letters were submitted, opinion letters were submitted. What didn't happen here was there wasn't what you would call a hearing or cross-examination of anybody.
Medical records are allowed to be submitted to the conflicted panel members.
Right.
There is no review. If it starts bad, it stays bad, is really the argument here.
You're saying it's bad because they were conflicted?
Because they were conflicted.
Right. But they're conflicted in your view because they are physicians on the panel with Pinnacle Insurance.
They are conflicted because they have a significant business relationship and or are employees of one of the parties.
Well, isn't there authority to the effect that as long as you're providing services and being paid a fee for those services, which is reasonable, that is not a financial interest in Pinnacle? Or other insurance carrier?
There are cases that evaluate the rough decision is perhaps what you're discussing here, or the minutious decision that has been evaluated on Division IME examiners. To my knowledge, there's not a specific case in point as on whether individuals who are working at the leisure of Pinnacle Assurance may then also work in a MUR capacity. The Rule 10 that the director has promulgated specifically says that if any panel member has any business or personal relationship with the claimant, they cannot serve on the panel. If there is any personal or business relationship between the panel member and the physician who's being reviewed, the panel member cannot serve. There is no similar argument or a conflicted determination made if the person has a substantial business arrangement with Pinnacle.
And because the rule doesn't require it.
Correct.
And what you want us to do basically is either rewrite that rule or disregard the rule or extend the rule some way to include a financial relationship between the MUR physician and Pinnacle to be deemed to be a conflict of interest. That's basically what you're asking us to do, right?
What we're essentially asking you to do, Your Honor, is to make the playing field fair, to apply a reasonable and just application of conflict to all parties across the board. If it's good for the claimant, it's good for the carrier. If it's good for the carrier, it's good for the provider.
So you want the MUR physicians to disclose their books to you to show who pays them and how much?
There is already a requirement under Rule 8 that requires physicians to disclose certain financial information to the claimants as a matter of request.
The claimants or to the division?
To the claimants. The new Rule 8 that the director has promulgated requires them to disclose that so that a claimant can evaluate whether a change of physician option should be exercised by the claimant during their course of care. This is really not extending anything beyond that. We're simply asking that the same Rule 8 applies in the conflict section of the MUR process. The carriers should not be allowed to stack the deck of the MUR panel and say, all of these providers work for us, and we're going to make a decision that's afforded great weight.
But those providers don't work for them, do they? They work for the patient, provide services to the patient, and get paid by Pinnacle.
In this particular circumstance, Your Honor, we have a medical director who was a panel member. Someone who worked as a medical advisor for Pinnacle goes in on a regular basis and sits and talks about many, many cases. They don't keep track of who those cases are, who the claimants are, but they sit at the table with the carrier. They know what the thought process is of the carrier, and yet they're allowed to evaluate doctors that they can sit and discuss with the carrier who they like and who they don't like. It's an inappropriate...
5 minutes.
Explain. Let me ask you about the conflict you're talking about. Are you assuming that the MUR decision is going to save money for the insurer and that's a conflict of interest?
Yes, I believe that would be the only reason why a carrier would pursue and spend the kind of money that's required to complete an MUR.
How about if the physician just wasn't giving adequate or proper treatment to the claimant, and the change of physician ends up costing them a lot more because different treatment is given? I mean, they're not directing the treatment that's going to be given by the new doctor, are they? The MUR is not doing that. They're simply selecting, saying a new name has to be provided. Isn't that correct?
To an extent, I disagree with that analysis, Your Honor, and that's because to an extent, as the opinions are extended from these MUR providers, they are in a circumstance where they say this care is not acceptable, it exceeds what should be done, and so it gives the next provider a roadmap, if you will, of what will and won't be acceptable in the future.
Does it have to exceed? Could it fall under the standard of adequate care?
I'm sorry, could you repeat
Couldn't
that?
Couldn't the MUR strike an existing physician because his care falls below an adequate standard of care?
It could, but it did not occur in this particular case.
But generally it can. And my point is a dime, which I understand how a dime is different. A dime, they're trying to save money for the insurance carrier. But here, they're trying to select what they feel is an appropriate physician for the particular claimant, which may or may not end up costing them more money or less money after the change occurs. That's where I think the conflict of interest analysis has to be a little bit different. I wonder if it doesn't have to be different in the case of the MUR versus the case of the dying physician.
If it's true, Your Honor, that their goal is to provide the best possible care to the claimant, and you're going to assume that was their goal in this process, in that circumstance, then it's reasonable for the disclosure to be made. They have nothing to hide. in that circumstance. There's no reason to hide behind.
Disclose that they work for the insurance company.
Disclose it to the claimant.
But the claimant here knew that. Mr. Mulligan's letter says Dr. So-and-so works for Pinnacle. He knew that. What didn't happen was they didn't take that into account because the rule doesn't cause that to be a prescribed conflict of interest. It wasn't a secret. Everybody knew that.
Mr. Mullins knew that. But yeah, I'm not sure that a claimant...
I assume he told his client. He notified the director, and they decided we're not going to extend the rule. McCauley doesn't have a financial interest in Dr. Hill's practice or the claimant. Therefore, we're not going to find a conflict of interest. But it wasn't secret. Everybody knew that he worked for Pinnacle.
Mr. Mullins certainly knew that. He is a practitioner who has dealt in this community for a long time. A claimant who would not otherwise be represented would not necessarily have that information, and therefore a level playing field is not, the claimant is not offered that opportunity to have a level playing field.
Another claimant, you mean not Mr. Franz? No.
Correct. And
I didn't realize Dr. Richmond's questions would take quite so long. I stopped the clock with 4 minutes left. Do you want to use some of that to address the other case, or how do you wish to use your 4 minutes?
Your Honor, if I may make one very quick comment with respect to the other appeal that is before you, and that is simply that I think this is a matter of absolute review that comes from the language itself. It's a textbook example. When an application is filed, so when all appeals are exhausted, and if the MUR is affirmed, a new ATP will be ready. Cannot possibly be anything that is ripe for determination by an administrative law judge. It cannot be contrived into that. And as a result, attorney's fees must be imposed when an issue like that is endorsed. And I will save the remaining three
Thank
minutes
you.
If I may.
Anytime you're ready, sir.
Morning. May it please the court. I'm Harvey Flewelling. I represent the respondents Brookhearts Incorporated and Pinnacle Assurance. At the council table is Assistant Attorney General A.A. Lee Hegner, who represents the Industrial Claim
Appeals
Office.
You want to divide your time in any way?
Mr. Hegner indicated he was not going to present any oral argument today, but if you have any questions for him, he's ready and willing to answer them.
Okay.
Easy on the
bread. Pardon?
I want to start by addressing the issues raised in the first appeal, the MUR appeal. A main part of the claimant's brief dealt with due process rights. I think there's only one word I need to say with regard to this issue is NAFIO. That's a Supreme Court decision that says the claimant does not have a property interest in receiving medical care from a particular provider or in receiving a certain type of treatment. In the NAFIO case, the claimant alleged that she was, I don't know if it was a she or not, the claimant alleged that they were entitled to a de novo hearing on the issue of change of physician. And the Supreme Court held that the director in an MUR cannot determine a claimant's right to medical benefits, nor a change of provider or a change in the type of treatment received.
Isn't this issue different in kind from the issue there? Isn't this issue kind of like, wait a minute, is the recommendation for some reason suspect, and therefore we have to determine whether or not the people making this recommendation for change of physician should be someone else?
Well, that may be one of the issues. That is one of the issues here that has been raised by the claimant. But certainly, I mean, I can't tell you what their reasoning is. From their briefs, their main argument is due process has been violated.
Let me ask you about your reasoning.
Pardon?
Let me ask you about the reasoning that goes to a rule that suggests that conflict of interest can be shown with financial involvement with either the provider or, I forget, the doctor under review. What would be the reason why the rule would not encompass a substantial interest in the insurer? What would be a reason? Give us a plausible reason why it's only either half of a conflict rule or two-thirds of a conflict rule.
Well, I believe the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation has spoken on this issue when he denied the claimant's motion regarding the conflict of interest issue by basically adopting the insurer's position statement. And in the Division IME cases, has clarified that one of the problems is we have a limited number of physicians who are qualified to review workers' compensation cases.
What percentage of the market does Pinnacle hold for the workers' compensation?
Roughly guessing about 60% insuring of the employers in Colorado.
50 or 15?
60.
60%.
I believe. At least 50, probably about 60.
So many of the people so qualified would have provided services to Pinnacle at one time or another.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Is this in the record, counsel? Is this somewhere in the record?
I'm not sure about that specific percentage or not.
Well, the comment that there's only a limited number of qualified people for us to pull from, is that in the record?
I'm not sure. I can offer you some supplemental authority of an order issued by the director in a Division IME context.
If it's not part of this record, doesn't...
No, this would be, this would not be a factual, this would not be part of the record. This would be legal authority, an order from the director who has indicated the reasoning behind these rules regarding conflict of interest is because of the limited pool of physicians. And it was an order issued in another workers' compensation case. I could submit that to the court if you wish.
It's not necessary, I don't think.
That's, as to the issue, the director has indicated that that's the concern, that's why. And obviously the statute, the MUR statute, does not discuss conflicts of interest. It pretty much leaves it to the director to administer the entire proceeding, MURs and division IMEs. And
would you agree that the MUR exercises a quasi-judicial function or not?
No, I would not, Your Honor.
And why not?
Number one, they don't adjudicate claims. They don't determine the rights. The Nafio case specifically held that an MUR does not adjudicate medical benefits or other rights under the Workers' Compensation Act.
The purpose of the MUR is to decide whether the claimant is receiving services that are reasonably necessary or reasonably appropriate according to accepted professional standards, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And it could be that the claimant isn't receiving enough services, isn't that right?
That is correct. Any party can request it.
And that's why the statute allows the claimant also to request an MUR, not just the insurance company or the employer, right? It's a two-way street, isn't it?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So that it could be that case that if the doctor who is treating him isn't doing enough, it could be that a change in physicians ordered by an MUR could increase the cost of insurance, right? It could go either way.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in here, I want to correct something because I believe there was a finding by the MUR committee. They unanimously found that the provider's care was not reasonably appropriate according to accepted professional standards, and they unanimously recommended that this physician no longer treat the claimant.
Right, but isn't there, and this request was initiated by the employer or the insurer, wasn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
Right, and isn't there, you know, the whole argument I think the opposing counsel is making is there's reason to suspect the recommendation of the MUR employed by the entity that initiated the request for a review of this particular doctor's performance. Now, even though the claimant could request, different doctor, I think that the position is that where the insurer requests it, and then the insurer's employees or people with a substantial financial interest connected to the insurer are on this panel, there's a semblance of unfairness there.
that's certainly their argument.
And it doesn't appear to be unfair to you?
No, Your Honor, because we have, for instance, you know, we could analogize the rule of necessity that we have a limited pool of physicians who are qualified, that are accredited under the workers' compensation system, that can review the treatment by another workers' compensation doctor. And with Pinnacle, who again has more than half, insures more than half the employers in Colorado, Pinnacle is going to have some sort of financial relationship with every doctor who treats workers' compensation claimants in Colorado.
Let me ask you this, counsel. I'm aware that there's controversy in the medical community about the use of narcotics or painkillers in the treatment of patients with chronic pain or severe chronic pain. And there's even a specialty being developed with respect to that, the treatment of chronic and continuing severe pain. A physician with that background on this panel?
I'm not sure.
Would it be important to have one on the panel that is familiar with pain management?
I think it would be important. And I will say that it's the director who appoints these panel members. The director is the one who determines what their qualifications are. I can't tell you whether the record indicates what the specialties are. It may in the panel members' opinions that they issued what their board certification is. I'm just not sure. But certainly these physicians met the standards that the director promulgated, and I think we have to trust the director, given his authority to do so, has chosen a panel that is competent to review this provider's treatment.
Well, I guess my question is, it seems to me not unreasonable that the claimant have some input into who serves on this panel, particularly in this probably sensitive area of what is reasonable and acceptable pain management therapy.
Well, no party has any input on who's serving on the panel.
I understand that.
And I guess my other point would be, I don't believe the claimant in this case objected to the specialty or the expertise of the panel members. The only objection that I'm aware of was their financial relationship that they may have had with Pinnacle. Certainly, one of the physicians was a medical advisor, which really has the role of a medical advisor has not been accurately described. And I don't believe it's in the record here, but in other cases, it's more described as determining whether these advisors are only paid, I believe, something like $300 per month. So we're not talking about, for a doctor, significant financial remuneration for giving the insurance company an opinion on whether treatment is reasonable and necessary, which is basically what they do. The claimant has argued that they help scheme defenses, and that is absolutely false. We rely on them to give us an honest opinion, so we don't have injured workers who are in the situation that this injured worker is, which is becoming a chronic opiate user.
All this is not in the record, right? All this is not in the record because the claimant never had an opportunity to have evidence presented to the ALJ or anywhere else about any problems with the MER. Never was permitted to challenge it.
As far as conflict of interest, the claimant was permitted to provide a position statement, I believe. I believe there may have been some attachments to that position statement, but other than that, no, there was no evidentiary hearing or discovery. And of course, the rule itself says there shall be no discovery or hearing regarding whether these physicians have conflicts of interest.
Can you shed any light on why the rule with respect to DIMES, which I guess is Rule 11, allows them to consider apparent conflict of interest, as the Benoitius and Ruff case by now. Yet the rule with respect to MUR doesn't indicate that they should consider apparent conflict of interest.
I have no explanation other than that's what the rules say, that rule 10 only talks about a conflict and between, and they use the same, you know, specifically says a conflict between the physicians, and then some of the guidelines are identical. But the rule on MURs does not address apparent conflicts. And it certainly was used by the ALJ, that distinction in this case.
And Rule 11 is clearly broader, but you don't know what the rationale is in the case of a dime, why it's broader, for looking at apparent conflicts.
No, I...
Let me ask you a question. I need to shift gears on you for a minute. Let's go to this the motion for attorney's fees.
Yes.
Why wasn't this an unripe or not ripe request for a FUATP? And what I really want to focus on is the rule or the statute, which says in 843.514, if the claimant and the employer cannot reach agreement within the 7-day period, the director shall select 3 new providers, which is kind of what happened here, except they only selected one. Then that one backs out because, I think it's a she actually, Dr.
Yes.
Shook had a problem with the patient, or the patient had a problem with her, whatever. The statute seems to be silent as to what happens in this case.
Well, we have a statute and we have part of Rule 10 that discuss what happens when the MUR recommends the change of physician. And again, it requires the parties to negotiate and requires us, you know, within 7 days, reach an agreement or the director shall select 3 from which
right.
they shall provide. And I believe there's another 7-day if the successful party does not select the replacement physician within 7 days, then the director will select the replacement provider. However, the time to appeal is 40 days. So the parties are in the midst of trying to find a replacement physician long before the time for appealing has run here.
What's the reason for being in a rush to select a replacement physician? To ensure continuity of care for the claimant.
That's absolutely correct. And the Nafio case basically said that. They said this procedure ensures that care is not terminated and that a new provider is chosen.
Was there a suggestion that the choice of physician either had or was about to shift over to the claimant?
Yes, Your Honor. In discovery responses, the claimant asserted that because Dr. Strzok refused to treat,
right.
according to the claimant.
In responses to your motion to have this determined now, or was there some suggestion that preceded the filing of the request for this hearing? Was there a suggestion that the choice of physician had shifted to the claimant before there was a request for a hearing?
Yes, Your Honor. And that was in the claimant's discovery responses to the insurance company, where the claimant specifically said, because you haven't chosen a replacement to Dr. Strzok, who was chosen by the division, the right to select the new physician has now passed.
But those came after the hearing was requested. The hearing was requested in August. The discovery responses weren't made till November of whichever year we're talking about, I think 2008. You first requested a hearing. The insurance company requested a hearing on a new ATP
and
then served discovery. In the discovery response, there emerged for the first time the suggestion that you've waived your right to pick, and therefore the administrative law judge heard that issue, sort of considered that issue at the hearing in January. Isn't that the sequence?
Well, I trust your, your recollection of the chronology. I will state that the insurer did go to the division and said, hey, we have this situation where the doctor has refused to treat. What should we do? They said, well, the MUR is complete, so they suggest, why don't an ALJ resolve this controversy? And that's what we attempted to do.
Who's treating the claimant now?
Another physician. I'm not Dr.
Hall.
Actually, Dr. Hall is, I believe, still treating. The insurance company did designate another physician as a replacement if for some reason the appeal is withdrawn or when that finally becomes final, which I guess is Carver will do.
That person that he doesn't, is like a standby doctor in the event A, the appeal's decided, or B, the claimant stops to see Dr. Hall and needs a new doctor.
Yes, that was our reasoning, and we believe that's the reasoning behind the statute and the rule that requires the parties to find this replacement physician in order to make sure that medical treatment is never terminated, that there's always a doctor in place.
And if the claimant elects to continue with Dr. Hall as he does here, he's at some risk that if his appeal's denied, you may deny the compensation to Dr. Hall for this.
Yes, that's correct. Period. I believe if the claimant elects to continue treating with the physician, the original physician, then there is a risk. It's not a mandated risk, but there is a possibility that the claimant could be held personally responsible for those fees.
So by selecting an alternative ATP, that claimant basically has an option. I can continue with my doctor and take the risk, or I can go to the ATP, the new ATP, and I avoid the risk.
Correct, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, I believe that you are absolutely correct in that the record does not contain a lot of the information that needs to be contained in here, and it's because the process doesn't work the way it's currently designed. An MUR physician can be anywhere in the state. There is not an examination that takes place of the claimant like there is one in the dime. When a dime occurs, there's actually physical examination of the claimant, and in an MUR, there is not one.
Well, an MUR, it's just a record review.
It's a record review, that's right. And a record review means that you can have any physician in the state who's a level 2 accredited physician be able to do this record review. It doesn't mean that it has to be someone here. So even if we assume for purposes of our discussions here that counsel is correct and that 40% of the population of physicians who are qualified to do the MUR are not connected to Pinnacle, then 40% of those physicians could be selected in this case to do the MUR. It doesn't mean that 60% are eliminated. It means 40% are available. And the same conflict.
40% may also deal with Pinnacle. The Pinnacle has 60% of the market. The physicians may provide services for various insurance carriers.
And, Your Honor, I mean,
this is not in the record. I mean, that's one of the problems. But
that's exactly right. It's all part of the problem. It's because the claimant is not allowed to ask these questions. They are precluded from being able to do that. They're precluded from being able to investigate as to whether these particular physicians have a conflict that is real and should be acknowledged by the director and by the judge when they get there. I think it's critical to the analysis here. There is a sense of fairness and fair play that must go to all parties in the case.
Well, not if there's no property interest.
Your Honor, at some point, it comes down to whether the claimant receives medical care. And the claimant does have a property right to medical care. But to medical care. Not from a specific physician, but they do have a property right to medical care. And they do have, the system itself has to remain just. And the system can't be just if there's a conflict for one, and there's not a conflict for the other, just because the other says, well, I'm bigger. If I'm bigger, therefore, I get to control the market. And that's not what justice is all about. It's supposed to be a sense of fairness, and fairness doesn't exist.
The director makes these appointments, not Pinnacle. I mean, there's a neutral party that selects the MUR review committee.
But it's done without an analysis of whether a conflict exists.
And that's true of Pinnacle, too. Pinnacle doesn't have the right to challenge conflicts, do they?
Pinnacle does. All Pinnacle has to do is come in and say that doctor has an association with a claimant and therefore should be excluded, and they're excluded.
But you can do that, too.
Only if it's a relationship with a claimant.
Yeah, right.
But not a relationship with the insurance carrier.
No, I understand that. But I mean, both parties have equal input into the selection of the panel, be it very limited in both cases.
Very limited in both cases, correct.
Given the fact that we don't know the percentages and all these numbers, I mean, the director has, the director and the workers' compensation people have already set up rules for conflicts. Normally, we would defer to their rules. That's what our case law says. We defer to an agency's interpretation, application of its own regulations. You're actually suggesting that we rewrite the regulation, aren't you?
If that were true, Your Honor, then in the Whiteside versus Smith case, the Supreme Court should not have done that either. The Supreme Court determined in that case that 1 in 3 cases, the claimant is denied and prematurely, and medical care is prematurely canceled by authorized treating physicians associated and appointed by the employer. Hmm. And it's, there's no reason to believe that those statistics aren't similar here.
I think we're out of time, Counsel. Thank you.
Thank you.
We thank both counsel for their briefs and arguments. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. And the court will be in recess, subject to call, and the bailiff may so announce.
All right. Okay, recess, subject to call.